So, emotions are probably not what we think they are. And maybe more often than not, thinking about emotions the way we think about them and conceive them, maybe there's some way that keep us from being liberated and free. Maybe even keep our emotions from being, have a certain kind of freedom. I'm very fond of the idea that in English, the Latin root for the word emotion, motion means motion, movement, and the E part, the prefix, means out, so moving out. And I'd like to interpret that all emotions are processes, so they're activities, they're movements, and they all want to move out. They all want to kind of spread or process themselves. And our inner life has an amazing capacity to process emotions, to let them unfold or dissolve or unfold the way that there's some wisdom to doing. And we often interfere with that wisdom. We interfere with the natural process. I love this. I love this way of thinking that I can cut my, you know, cutting vegetables in the kitchen. I might cut my finger, and might bleed, and I have a responsibility or opportunity to take care of it by maybe washing the wound and putting a Band-Aid on it to protect it. But the actual healing, I can't do. It's physiologically a much more complicated event than I could ever possibly engineer and understand, figure out, send the right antibodies and proteins and hormones or whatever is involved into the right combination of things and make the whole thing heal again. What I do is keep the wound clean and safe and protected. So the body knows, has the wisdom to heal the wound usually. And the same thing with our emotional life. Our hearts, our inner life, knows something that if we get out of the way, can allow it to unfold and to move to some resolution or some solution or some unfolding or some place, depending on the emotion that's there. And many times we don't allow that because we're so involved in either the emotion, reacting to it or something, or we are spinning the story even more, spinning the story. So like they say that one of the leading causes for depression, not the only cause, I don't want to give that impression, but one of the leading causes is rumination. One of the things that makes grief a lot more difficult than it needs to be is rumination, is thinking and rehearsing and remembering and feeling guilt and blame and all kinds of things. That gets in the way of really trusting and respecting the grief. So it's like the beach ball, you know, that we are constantly kicking up before we can pick it up and hold it gently and in the palms of our mindfulness. And so instead of keep the momentum going all the time, in mindfulness practice, we're learning how to kind of get out of the way with the deep respect for emotions. And I like very much the word respect as kind of a synonym for mindfulness or for vipassana, because respect, it comes from the Latin prefix again, and spect, like spectator or spectacles, to see. So to look again, to respect our emotional life, is to give it a second look and really kind of, what is this? And then see it clearly and allowing it to unfold and be there. And whether that's useful in all circumstances in life, I don't know. But it is very powerful and effective to do in certain circumstances of life. And meditation is one of them. Sometimes when I have strong emotions that are difficult for me, I will go for a walk in the mountains and go for a long walk. And the walking I find very useful because there's something about the movement of walking that allows, that keeps me from getting locked into the emotion and the thoughts. And I can let all of it just flow and do what it needs to do. Sometimes when I've had strong emotions, difficult emotions, I'll sit in meditation and I don't try to stop anything. I don't even try to stop my thinking mind per se, but I'll constantly come back and compost the strong emotions in my body. Just let them, which means for me that I keep returning to feel what's happening emotionally in my body, like make space and really feel it. And when I do that, I'm stepping a little bit away from the thoughts that are spinning. And if I only thought, I'd probably get into all kinds of trouble and go crazy. But I step away from it, but not to stop it, but to kind of change the context and really feel what's there, and as if the body knows how to process it and unfold it. And then I'll do it again and again as I compost what I'm feeling. So there are some emotions that are clearly a byproduct of what we think. And I've sat in meditation and had a perfectly lovely, peaceful time. And then for reasons that I have no idea why, I'll think about some conversation I had with someone 20, 30, 40 years ago, now getting to be almost 50 years, some of them. So, and then just somehow that comes through the mind, this thought. And with that thought, boom, I get angry or irritated or afraid or something. And then, you know, I can see, you know, as I keep telling the story, she said, I said, I should have said, why didn't I say? I could feel the emotions and the heat kind of operating. And it was clear that the thinking, the thoughts, seemed to be really central to keeping this thing going. And then I've had times when I've learned to kind of quiet the thinking mind and just be with the feelings and the emotions. And it's really clear that I'm no longer feeding it. I'm not like pouring gasoline on the fire. And then something different begins to happening. Something's cool and quiet and subtle. And rather than solving our emotional problems, sometimes they dissolve. Sometimes what happens is that, you know, some emotions that many of us feel, have nothing to do with our external life, but maybe it has, you know, to do with physiology. And so it's not a matter of what we're thinking a lot, but it's feeling it in the body and not identifying with it, not making a story out of it, and a story about, oh, poor me, I'm bad or I'm wrong, that I should feel this way. And making a lot of space for it so that the mood or the emotion that we have is not a filter through which we see ourselves and see life. And that ability to not let it be a filter that sees what's going on has a lot to do with this ability to really stop and look and respect what's happening here and acknowledge it, recognize it, really feel it and know it, and to maybe tease it apart and just let it be simple for itself. And then that's a kind of liberation. That's where freedom can happen, where we're no longer entangled and caught up in all this, and we can just allow everything in its uniqueness to be there for itself. And this it's a beautiful kind of generous thing to grant, to give all the particularities of our life its freedom, to let an emotion give its freedom to emote, to be there in the quiet and the safety of just being present for it. To allow, you know, our reactions and our identifications with it, to let that be free, meaning we don't kind of get involved and keep thinking it and, you know, scratching the scab. We just let it kind of, okay, you're there, and okay, you're free, but you're free in a sense that you're not casting a light back on me and I'm not defining myself by it. So this wonderful part of mindfulness practice, and a rich part, is bringing mindfulness to a real careful, respectful attention to the fullness, to the richness of our emotional life. And but not to be involved with them, and not to celebrate them, and not to denigrate them, but you just allow them to be there in their simplicity. And what happens with that, at some point we start seeing that there are two classes of emotional, in the emotional life, two classes of kind of emotions or attitudes that we can have. One are the ones that, they're the ones that are clearly involved, arise out of our reactivity, arise out of our contraction and resistance and pushing and wanting and not wanting and the ways in which we build ideas of self, me, myself, and mine, or attitudes towards others. And they're a little bit more compulsive. It's a little more automatic, and they involve what in Buddhism, early Buddhism, might be called some level of craving or drivenness and lack of freedom. There's a whole other class of emotions that come when there's no reactivity, but rather it's the free and unfettered response of our psychophysical system. Some people might say of our hearts. And those feelings and emotions seem to grow and expand the more we're present for them, rather than dissolving because we're not feeding them anymore with our attention and our stories and all the rumination. Things like compassion, kindness, warmth, generosity, love, these are wonderful states that can be pure and simple and spread out throughout our body, seemingly throughout the whole world, spreading from us in their simplicity, that somehow learning to get out of the way and not being entangled with them and shoulds and shouldn'ts and defining ourselves by them and trying to do something with them, just relaxing and just allowing the simplicity of these good states and this good sensitivity to be there, these beautiful capacities for heart-centered emotions can grow and develop. So to develop a heightened respect, sensitivity, care, attention to our emotional life is one of the great benefits of Vipassana practice. It's one of the great gifts to and life seems so much richer with a this liberated emotional life. So thank you for today, and I'll continue tomorrow with the mindfulness of thinking. And there also, thinking is not what you think it is. So thank you.